And one thing that, you know, really attracts the attention of the S&T editorial staff to this star is, you know, obviously just from a research scientific point of view, it's a very, very interesting system. But especially for our staff and our readers, the fact that amateurs, you know, all the way from naked eye observations to very sophisticated setups, can actually make meaningful contributions to the study of this system, I think really raises the interest level even higher. And so we decided to include the four amateur sidebars to really highlight that aspect of the story. I mean, clearly you played a pretty active role in coordinating and communicating with these amateurs. Can you just tell us a little bit more about your role in that area?
Well, first let me just say amen, brother. The participation of amateurs and advanced amateurs has made all the difference this time around. And as you and your readers well know, over the long sweep of history, so-called amateurs have made pivotal sets of observations, especially when they are persistent. Galileo and our friends that did the early solar sunspot counts and discovery of variable stars, etc., and especially with the research funding climate not looking all that promising, we may, in science terms, really depend on citizen science participation over the long haul to make sure that the bases are covered, as it were. So it's been particularly personally gratifying, you know, as a proud member of the Milwaukee Astronomical Society back in my youth. It's wonderful to have amateur and advanced amateur participation in science, and I hope we're setting a good example. There's certainly lots of these kinds of cases going on, and it's a wonderful opportunity. And someone recently on Science Friday mentioned an important point that if we're going to try to keep educating the public, citizen science is an important way to get their brains engaged in what's at stake.
Right, and it's interesting too to me with the potential of citizen science. It's getting to the point where people don't even need telescopes or even to go outside. They can do things like classify galaxies using Galaxy Zoo, you know, search for new planets using planethunters.org, that the types of projects that citizen science can do is just really expanding at a very, I find, very exciting rate and just tremendous potential out there.
Absolutely, and it's not only astronomy. Consider Audubon and other kinds of nature watchers who record their results faithfully and collect them and archive them. And of course, we have to salute and shout out to AAVSO, which is another premier organization in this arena, celebrating its 100th anniversary, of course.
Right. In fact, in the article, we have a sidebar by Aaron Price, who's a good friend of mine, about the Citizen Sky Project, where they got really thousands of people around the world to monitor the star, you know, on a regular basis and produce, you know, pretty darn good light curve at multiple wavelengths. How would you say that light curve has, you know, contributed to our understanding of the star?
Well, it's remarkable coverage, and there's always a little bit of statistical work to be done after the fact to try to deal with the outlier reports and so on. But overall, the density of coverage, I mean, we've got bumps and wiggles that one could only imagine were present in prior eclipse reports. And those bumps and wiggles relate to either the instability of the F-star or possibly spiral structure in the disk, if I may speculate a little bit here. There's every reason to think the disk is a very dynamical entity, and gravitational perturbations may induce all kinds of structure. So light curve details are what we researchers are going to be interested in as we move forward on this study of the system. So AAVSO, Citizen Sky, and I'm proud to be a part of that process, has succeeded marvelously. We are preparing reports for the Journal of the AAVSO, including all of these amateur contributions. Plus, ideally, it's attracted a lot of new attention and membership for AAVSO Variable observing, and that's going to be to everyone's benefit.
And then, of course, there was another sidebar also involving photometry written by Jeff Hopkins in Arizona, where he and others compiled, you know, not kind of as large a number of people, but using electronic detectors can get very precise data. And, you know, Jeff has produced some really beautiful light curves of his own data and also assembling this data from other advanced amateurs. I would think that, that's also a very, very important data set.
Oh, absolutely. Again, I have to salute and shout out about Jeff, my good friend for two eclipses now. He has been doing yeoman's work supporting the campaign activity, 24 newsletters this time around, lots of fabulous data. You know, he does photometry the old-fashioned way, so-called photon counting, which is in many ways a little more precise than CCD work. And he has been so doggedly persistent for the past 30 years on Epsilon Aurigae and a variety of other star systems, mind you, that you know, I think his achievement deserves all the recognition it can get.
And then we also did sidebars by Robin Ledbetter and Gary Cole, and I found that particularly interesting because they talk about spectroscopy and polarimetry, and those are areas that, you know, people traditionally haven't really thought of as areas where amateurs could make important contributions, but clearly I think their results during this eclipse really demonstrate that this is an area that more and more amateurs are going to be moving into. Would you agree with that?
How could I disagree? Of course. And in the case of Robin Ledbetter, a very talented person, actually a physics person by training, now in retirement, he's seized upon the opportunity to attach these new spectrographs, Christian Buhl's Elhiras in particular, and that's really opened up the frontier for a lot of people with modest telescopes. I don't think his is much bigger than 8 or 10 inch, and yet on bright stars he can get fantastic spectra. In fact, his work on the near-infrared potassium line is giving us our best information about the potential mass of that central star in the disk. On the Gary Cole front, he's an example of what's possible among advanced amateurs. I think he has an engineering background, but the point is he rose to the challenge wanting to try something new, so he built his own polarimeter in front of his CCD camera and started making measurements, and those are some of the most important and very unique measurements of this eclipse that we have. So it's just people with the right enthusiasm and enough smarts to pull it together can do some very unique things that otherwise aren't getting done on the big telescopes due to just shortage of time.
Right. I mean, people have to remember that, you know, there's thousands and thousands of professional astronomers all over the world. They're all competing for time on these major observatories. There's only a finite amount of observing time, and, you know, an observatory director is going to be reluctant to give a huge amount of time to any one particular research project, and yet you have these very enthusiastic and talented amateurs who, you know, for them, this is kind of a fun and interesting thing to do, and they could observe the same star night after night after night, as long as it's up in the sky.
Absolutely, and not only is there Epsilon Aurigae, but there are thousands and thousands of bright stars that small telescopes can get excellent signal-to-noise, especially with CCD class detectors. There's just lots of opportunity, and places like AAVSO website will certainly give interested parties a number of ideas of things that can be worked on. Personally, I'd like to see EPSOAR continue to be followed because it does have a lot of out-of-eclipse variation, perhaps the F-star falling apart as it evolves. And although difficult to characterize, if we don't have EKG, then we won't be able to analyze it successfully 10 years from now.
Now, are there any other star systems that you're particularly interested in or would like to focus amateur attention on?
Well, there are many to choose from. again, I think a good thing to do would be to encourage people to look at AAVSO resources. I'm partial to these long period binaries, eclipsing binaries of the Zeta Horiae class, but they're not the only stars in the sky, I'll admit that. They do have their infrequent eclipses, but there are lots of other objects. People interested in seeing nightly changes, of course, can study sorted cataclysmic variables, or even some of these active galactic nuclei show some fairly rapid variation and related to black hole accretion. So there are many, many observing opportunities, and as you point out, the large telescopes can't cover everything all the time. If I may add, though, I've been exceptionally pleased and gratified to get a bunch of large telescope time for this eclipse phenomenon. It doesn't hurt to have that interferometric imaging Nature paper up front. That certainly opened doors with Hubble and Gemini 8 meter and other large telescopes. So, again, sometimes you win in this game.
Right. That answers the questions I had, but did you have anything else you wanted to add that I did not ask you about?
Well, a couple of things I probably should say. One is, thank you, Sky and Telescope, for your long, long service to astronomy, especially in the amateur community, but I know a lot of professionals look at the magazine, too, and it's a fantastic product, especially in this challenging transitional time with the internet. It's still a wonderful resource, and when people donate stacks of old issues to us at the historic Chamberlain Observatory, we put them out for the public to pick up, and they disappear pretty quickly. So I think there's still plenty of room for a product like yours, and great job with it. So thank you very much from everyone out here. Also, as I move into the later stages of my career, having been at it for more than 30 years already, naturally I'm concerned about the promotion of astronomy with bright young people. There's a natural interest in astronomy among the youngsters, but sometimes many of them get sidetracked with other more interesting earthbound topics, I suppose, as they should. However, the light pollution solutions are going to depend on people being aware of that natural resource, and if we continue to blind ourselves to it, the future future looks overly bright in that respect.
Right. Okay, well, I really want to thank you for your time today.
Again, thank you.
Okay, great.